Hi, I'm Robin McCauley, and you're listening to the Rock Solid Podcast.
Make me a deal and make it good for me. I won't get full of myself, I can't afford to be. This is small town music, this is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. If only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song away.
Hey everybody, welcome to Rock Solid, the comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic. I'm Pat Francis, and joining me in the Zoom room to promote his new solo album, Alive, please welcome the hardest working vocalist in rock, Mr. Robin McCauley. Hey Robin.
Drum roll. Good morning, Pat. Thanks for having me on. How are you?
I'm good. It's nice to see you. And where are you Zooming from right now?
I am in Los Angeles, California.
Well, I'm right there with you. I'm in Woodland Hills. Did you get?
Oh, dude, you're just up the street, aren't you?
Yeah, sure. If you want to give specifics, I don't know exactly Los Angeles.
I'm right over at the I'm borderline Ventura County, so I'm right up at the Reagan.
All right. Okay. Cool. Simi Valley area.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
So did you get shaken up last night?
You know, don't laugh, but I heard something and yep. I thought it was my cat running up the stairs. And my wife said, did you feel that? And I went, I thought that was the cat. And she goes, no, that wasn't the cat. So her phone started going off. Mine started going off. And I went, oh, something in Malibu, a 4.2 or something. So that's the first one in a while. Yeah, time. But we've got all the way over here. Not much, but
yeah. Hey. We had a good little jolt, but not crazy. Just enough to wake us up and then keep us up for a couple hours.
Yeah, the cat woke me up.
How long has Southern California been your home?
Oh, my God. 35 years.
Wow. All right.
Yeah. I came here in 88 and never left.
All right. I came here in 95 and never left. So
where did you come from?
I grew up in Pennsylvania, but then I lived in Chicago for 6 years before coming here. Ah. So I was definitely ready for the warm weather.
Oh, my God. You know, it's already too cold, right?
I know. We have California bones now. If it gets,
I used to have kryptonite in my blood gone. Yeah.
Hey, my first question to you, and this will sound like a funny question, but I'm totally serious. Do you ever not sing your ass off?
Oh, my God. That's a question. well, I'm glad you think I sing my ass off. I love to work.
Yeah.
I love to work. It probably sounds like I sing a lot more than I do, but people go, where do you find the time to make two Black Swan records, two solo records, and still do the other stuff? I'm really good at time management. and I love to work. And I think I'm blessed and fortunate that my phone rings and people want me to work and still think that I'm good enough to work and good enough to get me out there and be part of whatever they're doing in addition to whatever I'm doing. So I'm really grateful for that. I don't know what else to tell you. I suppose one of these days I'll wake up and I'll go, I don't want to do this anymore, but it's not today.
Right. No, in case people don't know, Robin's new album, which will be out, February 17th, by the time you guys hear this, it'll have been out for a week. The album is called Alive. It's his new solo album. But he has released four albums in 4 years. 2020, Shake the World with his band Black Swan. Then 2021, Standing on the Edge, solo album. Then 2022, Generation Mind, the second album with Black Swan. And now in 2023, Alive, another proper solo album. I feel like you have a newfound energy. It's like you're a man on a mission right now. This is incredible. So much material.
I guess thank you to Frontiers. You know, Frontiers approached me almost a year before we actually dropped Shake the World from Black Swan And to be perfectly honest, Pat, I said, nah, I don't want to do a solo record. Who the hell wants to hear a solo record from me? So without getting into specifics, other than the fact that I just didn't want to do it and I didn't know what to do with a solo record, we stuck it up on the shelf somewhere and not too close to the top. And fast forward somewhere, I get a call from Jeff Pilson and he goes, hey, Frontiers wants me to put a supergroup. And I went, well, you can forget that too, because I said, nobody listens to supergroups. That's like, it's a joke, you know, speaking of comedy. And he goes, well, you're the only singer I've asked because I really want you to do it. Jeff and I go back. I'll be married 30 years to the same woman this year. And Jeff was our best man 30 years ago.
Oh, so. Wow. And and he was on the third Macaulay Shanker album. He was in the band.
Yes, he was. And with James Kotak on drums. And yep. Jeff also came out and was on the Unplugged tour on the U.S. side of it for a lot of dates. And so Jeff went on to say, hey, I got Red Beach. Reb really wants to do this. He did the Dock and Tooth and Nail. And I said, hey, if you play bass, I'll do it. And he goes, no, I'm producing. I'll probably do a little co-writing. And I'll sort of be in a supervisory role. And I'm going, Jeff Pilton, a supervisor? I said, you play bass and write songs. Anyway, the rest you know. We kind of bludgeoned him, which wasn't difficult because, you know, he's just awesome.
He might be harder working than you, Robin.
You know, he never stops. He never stops. And now he's part of Revolution Saints with Joel Hoekstra.
And Foreigner.
Yeah. So we got it going. And then the label says, hey, maybe you should keep up the momentum and get that solo record out that you refused to do. And so there I was and I didn't know what to do. And yeah. We got it done, and I was really surprised that I got any kind of reaction at all, but we did. And suddenly we have Generation Mind, and here we are with Live, and I'm going, oh, fancy that. Look at all the work we just got done. So it wasn't planned. It just kind of segued nicely one to the next. Yeah.
It's kind of surprising to me in a 41-year recording career, Alive is only your third proper solo album.
Actually, it's officially my second because the first one, Business as Usual, I had co-written that with Frankie Sullivan from Survivor.
Yes, and Kurt Cuomo.
And Frankie came into town and he goes, hey, John Culloden has been talking to me and he just absolutely loves the Macaulay Shanker single Anytime. And he thinks you and I would have a great collaboration. Fancy getting together, writing some songs. Then I later heard that I was actually supposed to work with Ricky Phillips, bass player with Styx, you know, sure. Also with the Babies. We wrote that record. We tried to pitch it to a bunch of labels. We had actually come up with a title for it called Inner Groove Distortion, I remember. And we went to a bunch of labels and they went, man, we don't hear too much distortion on here. And it just sat. I mean, it sat around for, I think, 5 years. Grunge was in. Alternative was in. There was no place for it.
Yeah.
And a Japanese label picked it up, put it out. Frankie goes, hey, forget it. Put it out as your solo record. So it was a non-intentional solo record. People loved it. People could only buy it on import.
Yeah.
And so there's the reasoning behind people go, dude, you don't make too many solo records. It's been what, like 99 was the last one. So this is my official second.
Official second. Well, just to touch on Business as Usual, and then we're going to jump right into a live.
Yeah.
I believe that was recorded right here in Woodland Hills.
Yes, sir, it was. At Kurt's home, actually. Yeah.
The song Every Little Thing kicks off with some classic Frankie Sullivan guitar. I mean, it literally sounds like Survivor.
Hey!
And for me, that album just sounds like three friends having a good time.
That's exactly what it was. We're just throwing ideas out there. We were going, this cool. That's cool. There was no really process behind it other than let's see what we can come up with. And that's really all it was. We wrote an album worth of songs. We stuck them together in the format that they're in and went, let's see if anybody has an interest in it. And nobody did. As so often happens. Sorry about that cough.
I know. It's rough. Just so people know, I'm muting my mic from time to time because I have
agony. A little tip from a singer, grab a facial steamer or just the old tried and tested tub of boiling water.
And do
it. Little Vicks vapor rub. Get our sand in the shower for an extra 5 minutes and get that moisture down the back of those pipes.
Well, I don't care how bad the cough was. I wasn't going to not talk to Robin McCauley today. All right. So Alive.
Yes.
This thing, it's just amazing. Like, I cannot believe how good this album is.
Oh, thank you.
I've been listening to it because of this interview. I've heard the whole thing through Frontiers, which Frontiers really does a great job with, if it's okay to use the term, with you legacy artists. You guys make videos.
Yeah.
The packaging's cool. Yeah. They seem to not spare any expense when they're putting these releases out.
It's awesome. You know, we dropped the title track Alive probably a month ago now. Followed by the second single, I think 3 weeks ago, Feel Like Hell. Both of them have videos. Album will drop on February 17th. We'll have a third single with that. And what's awesome is they kind of give me free rein with the artwork. And like on Standing on the Edge, like on the Black Swan stuff, we had Stan Decker do the artwork for Black Swan. And I've worked with the same artist, Nello Del Omo, for my solo stuff, and he is amazing. And they go, hey, got any ideas? And that's the worst question you can ask me, because when I was writing the lyrics and melody to Alive, I'm already in cover artwork, and I'm going, and I love old vampire movies. I love the old Hollywood movies. I love the old Frankenstein movies. And as soon as I decided, which was very early on, that Alive would be a great album title for me.
Yeah.
Not least to mention, you know, I'm hitting a gigantic birthday, but I feel really good. And I felt really energized, and I went, oh, this would be a great title. And I started conjuring up this sort of power charge and stuff. And then I went, oh my God, if we could create an old Frankenstein type laboratory, have the incubator, bring the electrodes in, do it that way, and have some fun with it, you know? And we just came up with all of these imageries until I went, we need to do this and put that in there and blah, blah, blah. And we did the same with the photos. Enzo Mazzio also works photographer for the label. And we did most of that in post-production because I said, no, I want to get all of this charge. And he goes, well, I can't do that live when I'm taking a photo. So we did it all post-production, did an amazing job because, Pat, if you know me, I'm not one for like standing up against a wall and I hate all that shit. I don't like that, you know. I just not into it. I'm not that. And Enzo goes, dude, what do you have? What do you have that we're going to do different this time? And I went, we're not standing up against a wall. I'm doing just a... And so did an amazing job, and we created all of that. And it's just, I love it. I love it because it's just different. And kudos to Alessandro Del Vecchio, who engineered and produced this one again.
And he plays on it.
He plays on it. Andrea Cerveso on guitar, who just kills it for me because I love that kid. I just love what he plays. Nicholas Papapico on drums, murders it, just brings the thunder in the background. And I think he makes my stuff sound different than all of the other Frontier stuff because the artwork doesn't look like any of the rest of them. And the sound is different. It's modern, it's powerful, and it's... It's good. It gives it a fresh approach, and that's what keeps me alive.
this shows what a nice guy you are, because this is it's a solo record, but you just gave a shout out to everyone that plays on it, and a lot of people might not do that. They might want you to think.
I don't do this. I don't do this by myself. I mean, I write all the lyrics. I write all the melodies. They throw a bucket load of songs at me, and I'm going, give me something like this, and they throw all of this stuff, and then I will sift through it slowly. I don't race through it, and I go, okay, I pick these 12, and I'm going to work on these 12. Alexander goes, go for it. And I've been telling people I'm kind of pissed because I submit all of the demos with all my ideas, and I'm expecting a little pushback. Better if you did that. Better if you did that. Maybe don't go to that note here. Do this. There was nothing. He just get.
Are you telling me you might like a little pushback?
Well, I enjoy the because you know you get so immersed in your own self, and you go, this is good, and I'm not changing it for anybody. But you only have one set of ears. I like other people to listen.
Right.
And go, you know, see, hear that chord? That's just sing that note over that chord, not the note that you're singing. And more times than not, it just takes it into a different dimension. It just gives it a different feel. And he goes, this is really good. I love this. Just go in, record it, and send me the stems on it. The only thing I didn't plan or map out before the vocals was all of the out sections. You know, I went, I'll just leave that for the night when I'm recording it. And if something hits me, it does, or I'll just hit the end record button. We'll stop it dead. And so it's great. It's a blast. It's a really fun process, you know?
Also going back to the PR photos, I saw those, the ones that you did with the, what are we talking about? With the lightning or the shocks,
the charge. Yeah.
And we'll be using one of those on our socials to promote this episode, but yeah, those are cool. And it looks like you're having fun doing something like that.
It's a blast because you can't see the post-production when you're right there doing it.
Right.
But you have to have the vision of what that's going to kind of look like. So, you know, we brought in the gloves, and I had all of that stuff, and I'm going, I want to use this stuff. And you kind of, you create the foundation for for what will become, goes into the post-production phase. And you have to, you don't always get it right, but you know, we were going, this is what we're going to do with it.
Yeah.
And you know, when you see it, you're going, oh man, that's awesome. and you can laugh at it and have fun with it. It's kind of boring, you know?
Well, it's great to hear in your voice after all these years that you're still getting a kick out of this stuff.
That's a blast. I love it. I'm not done.
what birthday is coming up? Do you mind telling us?
Oh, it's gone.
What was it?
It was on the 20th, last Friday.
Happy birthday.
Happy 70th birthday.
Well, this is incredible. I'm going to be 59, so I'm almost.
Oh, dude, you're a baby.
I know. It's weird, but you look great. You sound great. And that just doesn't happen automatically. What do you do to keep the pipes in shape and to keep yourself in shape? Do you exercise? Do you have a diet you adhere to?
Digressing a hair, my sister Margot, she said, so 70, huh? And I'm going, I just checked all my records this morning to see if there was a typo. She goes, no, there's no typo. She goes, but think of it like this. Think of it like you're just 18 with 52 years experience.
And I went, nice.
Okay, I'll keep that. So I take great care of my voice. It's my instrument. It's my responsibility. If I want to continue to do what I'm doing, that's my responsibility. I love walking. I don't do anything extraordinary.
Yeah.
I've never smoked in my life. I don't know if that's paramount. To me, it is. I'm an absolute extreme avid non-smoker. I mean, extreme. When I mean smoking, I mean right across the whole gamut. I've never smoked anything in my life.
Well, I'm right there with you. I grew up with parents who smoked, and I hated it so much.
Likewise.
That I've never smoked anything.
Likewise.
No cigar at a bachelor party, nothing.
Oh, dude. No, I've been given, my kids were born. Oh, dude, you get the cigar. I went, well, that's really nice. I know it's like customary, but I won't be smoking it. Yeah. I can't be in a room full of smoke.
I hate it.
I actually, to the extreme, and I'm going to nail this because I'm telling you, I won't even sit at a table that has an ashtray on it. That's how bad I am.
No, it's gross. I hate it. I'm right there with you.
Yeah, it's gross. So if that is one part that helps me with my voice, it's not going to happen now. I love a glass of wine or two or three, but when I'm working, alcohol's out. Alcohol to me is just very constricting to the vocal cords. Doesn't work for me. But when the job is done, I'll sit with the best of you, man. And then I can have a drink, and I can have it at my leisure. And I don't have to think, I have to record tomorrow.
Right, exactly.
And that's my cutoff. That's just how I roll.
All right, I want to let people know that they can go to, we're not wrapping up, this sounds like I'm wrapping up. I just want to let them know, you can go to YouTube and you can see the videos for Alive and for the second release, Feel Like Hell.
Correct.
And I want to give a shout out to a song on the album called Can't Go On, which it's just epic for me. I just love that so much.
Well, if you like it that much, it's going to be the third single, I believe.
I should
well
be
done, Pat. Well done.
I should be an A&R person.
Yes, you should. You know, that we were discussing, you know how it is, you get pigeonholed and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
That's your bag, man. Also, I don't like that kind of stuff either. So we were like tossing it up in the air. We were thinking maybe Bless Me Father. It's a great, I love that track. We were thinking then maybe Endless Mile might be the third single. So we keep everything, you know, crash and burn. And then one of the guys at the label says, well, we do know you for the ballads. And they were going, we think maybe the ballad, because that's kind of what people are going to go. There it is. There's the ballad. And I think it's and thank you. I think it's a beautiful song.
It really is.
Great song. Great arrangement. When I first heard the music, it was very basic, and I listened to it a few times, not as many as I did the rest of them. And I went, oh man, this is just, and I love working on that kind of stuff. I just immerse myself into it. In fact, one of the writers, Ulrich Longfist and Pete Alpenberg, that come from Sweden, I worked with them and I worked with them on the last album. And when I wrote the bridge section, he comes back to me and he goes, Promise me you won't change that bridge. Tell me you won't change that bridge when you go to record this for real. Please don't change that bridge. And I went, change it for what? He goes, I don't care. Don't change it for anything.
Don't change it at all. Yeah.
So, and, you know, they get, and he goes, I want to hear this immediately. You know, and before, just when the mix was done, oh my God, he was like, can I hear it? Can I hear it? And I went, no, you can't hear it. He goes, oh, come on, man, let me hear it. So I think it came out great. I think it's just a great song. Yeah.
Do you have a muse for these ballads that you write?
I don't have a book of words on the desk anywhere in the house. I don't have a dictionary of like lyrical song phrases. I have nothing like that. It really, honest to God, comes to me as I listen to each track. Every track I leave on the day for the moment, and whatever garbage comes out, that's what comes out, and I can't change it. And sometimes I'll have an idea, a particular idea, like a storyline idea, and I'll think of something, and I'll actually start Googling and see if I can find a book or a story or a movie that go with that idea. And then I'll drop the song completely and I'll spend a couple of days just reading on this and find myself a new story. And then I'll come back to the song and see if anything makes sense to me. And I'll usually go down that road, as I did somewhere in the middle of the record. There's a song on there called My Only Son. Which is based on actual fact of a lady, I call her, she was actually a murderess, called Santa Keams. And she, true story, Mary Tyler Moore played her in a movie, I think, called My Mother's Son. She had two sons. She had a very wealthy husband whom she murdered. One of the sons she had an incestuous relationship with, molded him to be just like her, murdering left, right. I think they murdered, at least they were convicted of about six people. And basically, they used to mix with the White House people. They were like very affluent.
Wow.
And she just was into stealing property and real estate and anything else she could do. And the end product was that she would murder that person and come up with some cock and bull story. And like everything, you always get caught. And she got jailed. He got jailed. She died in jail. She threw him under the bus, said it wasn't her. It was all his idea. And then when she died, he spilled the beans. And,
yeah.
He was headed for the execution block because I think it was still legal in California at the time. And he's still in jail. He's actually still alive.
Wow.
Still in jail in California. So anyway, I just digress there a little bit. But just to answer your question, sometimes I will actually go down that road of facts and stories and all of that. And that gives me another, there's so much information out there.
There is. Yeah.
If you really want to get interested, Jeff Pilson, when we write the Black Swan stuff, he goes, dude, always a story. There's always, and I'm going, yeah, but isn't it great? Because you just learn something, you know?
So 2022, last year, Generation Mind, the second Black Swan album, the title track it's killer. It's just so fantastic. Album's great.
What about the artwork?
Again, Frontiers is killing it. Yeah, the whole thing's great. Is there a plan to do more new music with Black Swan?
I'm told on good authority that there will be a third Black Swan record.
All right. And
is that the best news you've ever heard?
Great news. And how do we get, I mean, everyone's so busy. Is there ever going to possibly be a Black Swan mini tour or some shows?
Not soon enough.
Are all you guys based in Los Angeles area? The four of you?
Jeff and myself are. Matt lives over on the East Coast.
Okay.
And Reb is in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
Reb's busy, of course, with Whitesnake. He's busy with Winger. Jeff's busy with Foreigner, other projects that he's recording and producing. We've always said since Shake the World that ideally in a perfect world, what would be awesome for Black Swan would be introducing ourselves on some of the big festivals, because you get a lot of people in the same place at the same time. Do weekend of festivals here, if we were available here. So you're going to get the masses. And if the promoters are going, oh, dudes, you have to tour, and then that would be the perfect way to introduce the band. Fast forward to 23, Frontiers are bringing back their live festivals that they did pre-pandemic. They've already started. I think they did some in Sweden already. There will be one in Milan about the middle of the year. I've already been asked to perform. I'll have my band, not my band, but I'll have these guys with me. And the plan is that we'll be rehearsed for it and that we should add some more shows to it. We're also hoping that, and I've been talking to Reb, that, you know, I said, dude, you have to be in Milan. If you're not there with Winger, just come anyway. And then we're going to introduce some Black Swans into that set. So it'll be a coverage of my solo stuff, Black Swan stuff, and should be really good.
Cool. And awesome. Then, and what about solo Robin McCauley shows to promote Alive?
Well, that's the plan, because I'll be in there rehearsing with the band. The band will be rehearsed, okay. And I'm hoping ready to go with some additional shows outside of the festival. That's the plan.
All right. Well, I hope Southern California gets one of those shows for sure.
I'll be working extremely hard to make that happen. Yeah.
Excellent. 2021, the Standing on the Edge solo album, which you're calling your first official yes. solo album. For me, there's something for every McCauley fan on this one. It kicks off aggressively with Thy Will Be Done. And then two songs later, we get like this lovely mid-tempo tune called Late December.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Thank you. You know, so to explain why I didn't want to do the solo record, I had no idea what to do.
Uh-huh.
And I went, who wants to listen to a Robin McCauley solo record, right? So once we decided, okay, I'm going to do it, I thought the best thing to do would be to reach out to people I'd worked with. So one of the writers that was with Survivor, I grabbed a couple of songs from him. He actually wrote with Jimmy Jameson, Tommy Denander up in Sweden, okay. Another Swedish writer. Phil Lanzen, now with Uriah Heep Uriah Heep is celebrating their 50th anniversary yeah. this year. Phil and I worked together with Grand Prix back in the UK. And I'm going to reach out to Phil. We'll write a song. So that'll sort of be a hint of the Grand Prix period with me. And that sort of stuff. That was the best way I thought to put together a solo record. And then other people I hadn't worked with. With Alejandro, I got some songs from him.
Yeah.
And then we put together a record that became Standing on the Edge. And we were right in the middle of the pandemic. So there was a lot of that stuff going on. Yeah. Standing on the Edge was very much that, you know, LA was kind of on fire and the riots and all of that sort of stuff. So that was kind of planned into the artwork. I don't know if anybody's ever seen it. It's up on my official Facebook page. But the artist who's really, really good with all of the softwares, he actually took the artwork from the cover and he brought all of those fires and that entire work on the artwork all to life.
Wow.
So it's like animated and you'll be going, get out of my face. Then of course I'm going nuts and I'm thinking, you know what? I have another idea for album covers of the future. So I can't say it because you know how people are.
All right.
So, that's a great idea, dude.
Yeah.
So we're working on something like that too. So.
All right. You brought up Grand Prix.
Yes.
1982. That's your first album with them. The album is called There for None to See.
Yes.
There's a song on there. There's only one Robin McCauley songwriting credit on that album, but the song is great. It's called Take a Chance.
Yeah, so quick story on that. So I'd known the guys for a bunch of years before my inclusion in Grand Prix. Mm-hmm. I knew the bass player, I knew Ralph, I knew Mick, the guitar player, and I used to do the pub scene in London. And they arrive in one day and they're going, "Hey, dude, you wanna?" Well, they don't say "dude" in London, do they? It's probably mate.
Yeah,
mate, right? And they said, "Hey, you want to get away from this top 40 stuff and sing some real songs?" So we cut a demo under the name of Raw Deal. And it was really well received. But at the same time, all of the punk explosion happened in the UK. So goodbye, long-haired dudes.
Right.
And there was no place for it. When the punk thing started to wane a little bit, those guys went on to form a band called Paris. And the singer that's now with Uriah Heep, Bernie Shaw, was the singer in Paris. They cut one record with RCA Records. And I get a call from Mick and Phil. And they went, "Hey, dude, we're down in the studio. Why don't you come down and hang and have fun?" And I said, "What are you guys doing?" "Oh, we're recording the second record. Bernie's taking time out. He's gone to Canada, which is where he's from. And we're just wondering if you'd come down, and we need a guide vocal for a few tracks while he's away," and blah, blah, blah. So
now, at this point, are they tricking you into joining the band?
Yes, I didn't, stupid guy. So I get there, and I'm thinking as I'm driving down there, I'm going, "Hang on, Phil is a great singer. Mick's a good singer, good enough to put a guide vocal down for sure."
Right.
So I get down there, and we're just messing around and really not working. And then Mick goes, "Hey, all of these songs are kind of written and stuff." And I heard a few tracks. And then they sent me in and goes, "Hey, you want to get one of these shot and see how it sounds?" And I did, not thinking too much about it. And then Mick goes, "This one is not written yet. Do you want to have a listen to it and see if you can come up with something? Because I'm lost. I can't do anything with it." And so in the studio on the night, I just came up with this lyric and the melody and just kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it became, Take a Chance. We did a demo on it. And then I get a call. "Well, do you want to join the band? We're changing the name to Grand Prix. And we already have a new record label. We'll be over with Chrysalis." And there's the story.
There's the story.
And I said, "You can't stick a knife in Bernie's back just because he's in Canada." And they're going, "Well, we'll be there." And it's odd. It's kind of ironic that Phil and Bernie have now been with Uriah Heep for 1,000 years.
Yeah, incredible.
And it's an awesome band. And he's an awesome singer. I had nothing to do with that transition, nothing at all. And it gave Grand Prix a sort of a different sound, different singers,
Yep.
They're just going to fuck up the whole band. That's what they're going to do. Excuse my French.
And then your second album with Grand Prix, Samurai, you co-write 8 of the 9 songs. So that was definitely different.
Everything was written on there for none to see, except that one track that makes sense.
Yeah.
You didn't know what to do with. So when we moved forward to Samurai, they wanted me to be more involved with putting my stamp on it. And I wish we could go back in, and we've had this conversation, I wish we could go back in and re-record that record, because I think I sing better now than I did then. So
There's some good tunes. I like I like Somewhere Tonight a lot.
Oh, great track. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Grand Prix stuff, huh?
Well, you know, when I'm going to interview someone, I make sure I dig deep and get involved.
Very cool.
FAR Corporation. Explain to the listeners what that is.
FAR Corporation was a studio project put together by the studio owner, producer, Frank Farian. Mm-hmm. So it became FAR, half his name, Corporation. Yeah. I ended up in Germany with guys, Phil Filthy Taylor, who was the drummer from Motorhead.
Yep.
And Robertson, who was also in Motorhead. They left Motorhead. Chris Glenn, who was the bass player with Alex Harvey Band, also with Michael Schenker Group. They called me and said, "Hey, you want to come down and write some songs?" It always starts like that, right?
Right. Here we go.
And so I did, and that took us into Frankfurt in Germany. We demoed a bunch of stuff, and this producer, Frank Farian, heard me sing, invited me down to his studio, and by the end of the first couple of hours I'm in the studio, I have now laid down a brand new track of a cover of Stairway to Heaven.
All that glitters is gold, and she's buying a stairway to heaven. When she gets there, she knows if the stores are all closed, will the world she can get what she came for. She wants to be sure, 'cause you know sometimes words have two meanings. In a tree by the brook.
And I'm telling him, I went, "You know, you can't really do this because blah, yeah." He goes, no, I want you to sing this portion and then somebody else will sing the end section. And I'm going, well, this is kind of weird. And of course, he produced, for those who don't know, he produced Milli Vanilli.
Yes.
We know the Milli Vanilli story, but yep. Millions and millions and millions of records later. He also produced all of the Boney M stuff. He did a lot of techno stuff with LaBouche. That was like huge.
I think he did an album with Meatloaf, I'm pretty sure.
Meatloaf and John Parr.
Yes.
Yeah, Meatloaf and John Parr. I did a lot of sort of side-by-side interviews along with Meatloaf when he was promoting his stuff. He also, Jennifer Rush came out of that studio with The Power of Love. She came out of that studio too. And so it was a project. We went live on the island of Ibiza at the Barcelona Olympics to millions and millions of people. The very first night that we aired Stairway to Heaven, I think we had a viewing audience of like 86 million people.
And you sang that live.
We sang that live. And I sang it live in the Vegas show for years. And the Radio Rockwell show. Yeah.
Now, is it true that a member of Led Zeppelin was in attendance when you once sang that live?
Well, not more than a member. Robert Plant was there with his solo band. So okay. we're when you're shooting a show like that, Slade were on the show.
Great.
Kate Bush was on the show. There was a punk band called Ten Pole Tudor out of the UK, all dressed like priests. I remember Bobby Kimball looking at him, God damn! It was like freaking him out. And Robert Plant was there with his band. We had this big black and silver backdrop, you know, black background with like Stairway to Heaven in silver. And we were getting camera positioning for the night show. And then the guitar player said, Robert Plant is staring down the back of your neck. And I'm going, sure he is. Now, I didn't see the roster of artists on the show.
Okay.
And I turn around and Robert Plant is literally from across the studio on his stage pointing to me. One finger pointing straight in my face. And it was almost like, right? And I'm going, don't look at me. You talk to the producer.
Yeah, it's not my fault.
It's not my fault. And of course, that remake went on to sell more than 2 million singles just in the UK. It was in the top 10. I think it made it to number 8. It was tipped to go number 1. The album was top 40 almost over all of Europe, and then we followed it with I think that was called Division One, and then we made another one, did the same thing, and it was a tremendous yeah. lineup. Simon Phillips on drum, Kurt Kress on drum, that also played with Falco, who also was huge at the time. We had Scott Gorham on some of the tracks.
And Lizzie. He's been on the show.
Right. So who else did we have in there? I can't remember.
So once you know that Robert Plant's there, does that ratchet your nerves up at all?
Well, yes and no, because I'm thinking, I want my mommy. This is not my fault. And I have a ton of photos with Robert and myself and
the rest
of the band. And he loved it because Stairway had never been released as a single.
Right.
It was never a single track because it's so long. And there was
Robin, he loved it because he's making some money off of that.
Oh, he was making bank.
Yes.
And then, of course, I had this, I guess they called it, what did they call it? Like a mullet haircut. And Robert had a kind of a mullet haircut at the time. So all of the English press would start releasing all of these statements with his mullet and my mullet. And I'm going, it doesn't matter what you put up me. His purse has got a lot more mullets in it than mine does.
Yeah.
But they loved it. Jimmy Page loved it. And we got the big thumbs up from them. And of course, you're right. They made a packet.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Let's talk a little bit about Macaulay Shanker Group.
Woo!
So you guys do 3 albums together. It was the Michael Shanker Group. And then when you join, whose idea was it to, because it could have still been called Michael Shanker Group and you could have just been the singer, but whose idea was it to make it Macaulay Shanker Group? Is that something, I don't want to say insisted on, but suggested, or did Michael suggest that?
I was the last of 17 singers who had auditioned.
Okay.
17. Michael had come to see me with all the group, Cozy Powell, God rest his soul, Chris Glenn, who was playing bass at the time, Andy Nye on keys, who went on to record and played keys on George Michael's Faith album.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all at a venue in London one night when I was on stage with Grand Prix.
Okay.
The next morning, I had a call. Michael is in the studio, loves your voice. Would love you to come down and sing with MSG. Gary is gone. He would love you to come in. And I went, I can't do that because I'm about to go on tour tomorrow, opening up for Sammy Hagar on the Stanley Hampton album.
Yeah.
And I got all of this bad press, like this young Irish upstart who refused to go and join Michael Shanker. Fast forward 3 years, Stairway to Heaven is now this huge hit at radio. Rudolf Schenker hears it, calls Michael, and he goes, I really like this singer. And Michael was auditioning and at Rudolf's studio in Germany. And he said, "You really should get this guy. This is the guy. I know this is the guy." Michael goes, "Well, no, he's not, because he refused to join me 3 years ago. I don't think he's going to do it now." Anyway, they tracked me down. I was back in the UK. I was doing some promo for Far Corporation and Stairway to Heaven.
Okay.
They got a hold of me. Long story endless. I end up at Rudolph's studio, the last of 17 singers. They're just hitting me with all of these MSG songs. Before I left the studio, Rudolph gives me a cassette tape. And he goes, "This is one more song that Michael has. Nothing on it. Just wants to see if you can come up with any ideas, lyrics, melodies. And we'll start back again tomorrow at noon." It's about 3 a.m. in the morning now.
Okay.
Right? And I've been singing for hours, and I'm thinking, I hate this. I had no interest whatsoever. And I got up, I had breakfast, and then I thought, okay, I'll show them. And I just wrote this lyric that became No Time for Losers. Came in, finished the audition. Rudolph goes, "Oh, did you put anything? Did you come up with anything?" I went, yeah, just run the tape. He goes, "Can I hear it first?" I went, "No, just run the tape. We'll record it. There's your demo." Got it done. And I left. I went back to London. And then I get a call from Michael 4 or 5 days later. And he said, "Klaus, Meiner, and Rudolph, and the management company, and myself, we would love you to be the new singer."
Nice.
And he said, "But there's one change that I really want to make." And he goes, "I know you and I have talked about how much you love the MSG logo, and it looks great on a jacket and a shirt." And he said, "So here's my offer. We keep the name MSG, but the M will stand for Macaulay." And I laughed and I went, "That's ridiculous." And I said, "It's established. If it works, don't fix it. Everybody knows it as the Michael Schenker Group. Absolutely not important to me that I have my name on there. Just not important, period." I said, "It'll cause too much confusion, because now you're established. You have, for all intents and purposes, a brand. And you leave it alone. I'm all good. Let's write some songs and see where we go." "Nope. I need this sorted out first. I want a partner. I want a 50-50 partner. And that's my part of the deal. And that's what I want."
Nice.
Macaulay Schenker was born, and it caused nothing but confusion. And I got slammed because we're going, "Oh, who the hell is this guy? Now he's made Michael Schenker all commercial, and what happened to that great guitar player? And now he's writing all of this soppy 80s stuff for MTV and VH1, which Michael never had before."
Right. He wanted that.
That's what I was supposedly hired for. And now they're like hating it because we're on MTV and we're on VH1 and we're on KNAC and all the rest of it. And yada, 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 yada.
Well, the Perfect Timing album, Give Me Your Love, that was the video promoted on MTV. And that gives Michael his first ever top 100 US hit song.
Tell you something, maybe again I won't, 'cause now you see me, but who knows, maybe you don't. Time after time, you have your chances and you throw them away. I know, don't waste my time, 'cause I don't need the glory, that's all I wanna say. Give me your love, no.
So Come on. It worked. And I did. Yeah. I liked when I saw Macaulay Shanker, I was like, oh, cool. It still is the same logo.
Yeah.
And they tweaked it
a little bit. Was the same logo. Same logo. Same logo. And then, of course, we move on into Save Yourself, heavier production. And then we release Anytime that sat AOR for like 4 weeks or something. That thing almost, you know, what killed us on Anytime was the Grammys. It was sitting pretty at number four, ready to bump into the main charts. And we were over with Capitol. We were distributed. We were EMI, but we were distributed through Capitol. And Bonnie Raitt picked up four nods for the Grammys.
Of course.
Yeah, we were out with Great White on the road. Poison were out, and everybody else was on Capitol were out, and everything just came to a standstill because now all hands on deck
for Bonnie,
which is awesome, of course. Yeah. Awesome, beyond awesome. But that was where we were at, and I also remember that I got the call from the then CEO at EMI in Cologne, in Germany. Because he'd had an email from, or a fax, I think. Whoa, remember faxes?
Yeah.
He'd had a fax from Capitol, and he'd gone, this is tremendous, what this record is doing. It's tremendous. And I had a call from the CEO, who's since passed away, I believe. And he said, it's doing so well right now that I am telling you as your Christmas present, this was, I think, November. And he goes, as your Christmas gift, I'm telling you that I'm already picking up the option for another record. And he goes, there's my Christmas gift to you. Well done. And I'm going, no. So it was great because they loved it. And then I think somewhere down the road, Michael started thinking that it was like music for housewives.
and then he wanted to get back into what was before, which is fine.
Which is fine because everything runs its everything, right. And he always rights to the logo, you know, because that's his name.
Sure.
And then we did Schenkerfest, which was best time ever. All singers involved, was just great. I did all of Europe with him last year, just me. I did all of the European shows with him last year, and we had the best time.
I'm a huge UFO fan, and other than Phil Mogg, I feel like his second greatest collaboration with a singer is definitely Robin McCauley.
Well, thank you for that.
I mean, there's other singers in and out, but for me, it's you and Phil.
Thank you. I'm a huge UFO fan. It's just awesome stuff. Awesome stuff.
Michael seems prickly. to put it nicely. I've met him as a fan, me, the fan, him, the artist. And he was, he was prickly at that meeting. Obviously, he couldn't possibly be like that in the studio, or it would be difficult to work with him. Could you tell us a little bit about what Michael's like when it's musician to musician, when it's he's with his peers? How is he?
I remember when I started working with him, he'd be, you know, I'd come up with melodies and lyrics, and then he'd be always working out the guitar parts, he'd be working out the solos. And he is, oh my God, he is fiercely dedicated to his instrument. I mean, fiercely. It's an extension of him. It never leaves him morning through night. It just doesn't. So he'd be practicing. But as I'd be writing melodies away from him, I'd hear melodies myself for the guitar over the chord structures. Wow. And I just have this, and it's nothing more than a bad habit, okay? And I'd be whistling or humming these melodies, which I'd be thinking would be a great guitar part. And sometimes he would stop and he would go, I get it. It's okay. I know what you're trying to do here, right? And I'm going, huh? He goes, you're just putting this into my head so I can't forget it in the hopes that I'll play it. He goes, but it's actually really good. And that's how easy he was. The other guitar player at the time, Steve Mann, who's with him still and is a tremendous writer himself and a great engineer and a great guitar player, great keyboard player, he would like Steve to be in the studio with him, but he insisted that even though I might be done with all my vocal parts, and even if he was working really late into the night, you need to be here. I need you here to listen to what I'm doing. And if you hear something, and so he was very trustworthy towards me with that sort of stuff. And I could talk to him and I go, you know, this is really good. Save Yourself, for example, the Save Yourself track. When I wrote the lyrics and the stuff to that, and I went, this needs something. It needs something. I think this is definitely a lead off track. It needs an intro. It needs something over the top of it. And he goes, what do you mean? I said, it needs you. It needs you here before we actually kick into the song. And he wrote all of that amazing piece that I don't think anybody can duplicate except himself.
Yeah.
At the top of the song. And that's the kind of little things that we'd work on. Today, when I work with him, I mean, on the last European tour, you know, so many times we just sort of go, do you remember that? Do you remember that? Do you remember that? And we just have a great time thinking about it and reminiscing about it. And what I really like about Michael is I'm a real stickler. One of the things we used to always say, Pat, was if you record it and you put it down, make sure we can do it live.
Live, right.
I'm a sucker for duplication. I don't want to go and see another band. I don't want to hear your 2023 version of a song that I loved here. I just don't want to hear it. I want to hear the damn song because that's what I like.
Right.
Don't come up with your own version on the spot.
Don't make a reggae version of it.
Because you just can't do the original like you did it. So you're just bastardizing this thing or whatever it is you think you're doing. And I'm like that. So we used to always say that. And damn it, to this day, all of those MSG songs, those Macaulay Schenker songs, I sing in all the original keys, just like they were recorded. We don't detune, we don't drop the tuning. And he plays all of those lead breaks just like he recorded them.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's an extension because you're in a live show. But those, the main focus of those melodies on those lead breaks are exactly, and he works, oh my God, all the time. He's always making sure that it's right, listening. That's wrong. And he gets it exactly like the record. And I'm laughing because that's exactly like how I like it.
Right.
And if I didn't hit those notes like I recorded them, I would get that sort of side lance. Right. I would get that side lance. And of course, you know, you age and you're going, can I do that? But so far,
you can. Well, thank you for shining a light on Michael for me. He is a genius, without a doubt.
He is an absolute genius. He's amazing. I think he plays better now than he ever did. And that's saying something. Yeah.
And, you know, if he's always playing, he can't help but play better.
He's a perfectionist.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things, and this is an interesting thing, he goes, you know, as you age, and we discussed this on the last tour, and he said, as you age, he said, there's a lot of guitar players who are always into fast runs. Mm-hmm. He goes, you know, over the age, your hands start to feel that. Yeah. And he said, I feel really lucky. I don't, my hands are not suffering. And you know, when we do the live shows and we go into rock bottom, sometimes the solo has been as long as, I think, 15, 17 minutes. And it's just, and it's amazing. And he'll go off, but he'll come back around to the main foundation of the solo that everybody remembers, those notes. And you're watching him and you're going, he's superhuman or something. Yeah. And the tone, his tone is Michael Schenker's tone. It's not anybody else's.
It's no one else. As soon as you hear it, you know who it is.
Yeah. So my hat always goes off to Hershenker. He's brilliant. He's brilliant.
One
maybe
more
he is, maybe prickly.
He was a little prickly. One more side question. From 2006 to 2011, you served as the lead vocalist for Survivor when they toured.
Yeah.
During that time, was there ever any talk about recording and writing new Survivor music with Robin McCauley?
Yes, there was, and we did. And Frankie still has it. Yeah.
All right.
We didn't write a huge amount, but we wrote some really cool stuff.
All right.
And he was really proud of it. And he used to say, hey, I know people will go, we can't write any hits like we used to. And he goes, they're right here. And he goes, this is as good as it gets. And we always thought that we'd put it out. And then there was, it hit the point after like 6 years where I think Journey brought in Arnell to sing, Foreigner were back out.
Yeah,
with Kelly, and so there was this resurgence of those bands, and they were getting a breath of fresh air back into their and revitalized a new energy.
Right.
And I think Frankie was advised that it needed to mend his ways with Jimmy Jamieson.
Yeah.
And so they decided that they would bring Jimmy and Dave in, and Jimmy would do Jimmy stuff and Dave would do Dave stuff. It was a great idea. Unfortunately, for Jimmy, didn't stay very long with us.
But it's good that Frankie had that, was able to mend that relationship with Jimmy.
It was very necessary because I wanted to say forced Frankie. He asked me when we wrote that Business as Usual stuff.
Yeah.
He asked me to join Survivor in 1994.
Wow.
And I said to him, and there was a lot of lawsuits because I think Jimmy was outdoing Jimmy Jamieson, formerly Survivor, or ex-Survivor.
Right.
He stopped him from doing all of that. And I went, this is what this man does. You can't stop him from doing that. And he goes, no, you should join the band. And I said, it's a pop band. I'm not joining a pop band. I want to be in a rock band. And he would go, you're wrong. It's a rock band. So that was our little inside joke. And I remember saying, you go and mend whatever needs to be mended. And he did bring Jimmy back in, and he goes, you were right, you were right. And they fixed it, and it didn't last very long before they separated again.
Right.
And then I came in for the 6 years, and Mark Drubay, actually, the drummer, lives in Woodland Hills.
I've seen him at the local grocery stores many times.
It was actually his birthday on the same date as mine. Yeah, we're not the same age, but...
I always want to go say hi to him, but I'm afraid I'll freak him out. So I never do.
Tell him I said hello.
You know what? The next time I see him, now I have to.
Yeah.
All right, Robin. In closing, I want to tell people where they can find you. Your website is robinmccauley.com.
Correct.
We can also find you on Instagram at robin_mc_Ollie, which is AULEY. Thanks to a couple of listeners, Jeff Scoble and Greg Deinhardt, who assisted me with some things for this episode. I appreciate it from you guys.
Thank you,
my last question for you, or my last request, Robin, is the playout song for this episode. It has to be something from Alive, and it has to be chosen by you. So what song do we end this episode with?
Let's go for, oh my God. Thank you for that. I don't want to give you the next single because that gives it away a little bit, but we can go with Endless Smile or Bless Me Father.
Let's do Endless Smile.
Endless Smile it is.
All right. Thank you, Robin McCauley. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. I can't wait for you to do a solo show in SoCal. And until then, everyone, go buy the album called Alive and please enjoy Endless Smile. Thank you, Robin.
God bless you. That was so much fun. Thank you.
Robin, I've been having a cold, so if I have a coughing fit, I'm just going to mute my mic.
That's okay.
If you see me convulsing, just ignore it and keep talking. But
I'll keep talking. I'll start sneezing.
All righty.